15 in your book.
Good afternoon, members of the commission and Secretary Hepler. Number 15 in your booklet, depredation permits and hunts. Before we get started, just to clarify for you folks, depredation hunts traditionally occur outside of normal hunting seasons. So I know there was some confusion in the past about different dates and ending the seasons, but just to clarify, these are hunts that are authorized by the secretary that occur outside of the traditional hunting seasons. Obviously, if we have a situation where we have a large number of animals and we want to initiate hunting pressure on those animals during the hunting season, we'll get regular hunters, licensed hunters, into those areas. Outside of those seasons, that's when we use this tool. I'm not going to go through all those 11 restrictions and requirements, but just to highlight a couple of them. Obviously, landowners are eligible if they occur on their properties. And then if you recall here, a year and a half or so ago, we did make a change to the way that we draw elk. If we did an elk depredation hunt, how we draw those applicants. In the past, we used unsuccessful licensed hunters. And then about a year and a half ago, we made a change where anybody except people that hold an actual elk license for the current year are eligible to be in that drawing. A little history about where these changes come from. If you'll recall from the legislative session of 2017, there was legislation that was passed that increased the transaction fees that retailers, gas stations, as well as our agency on the website charge when people buy those hunting licenses. And those fees generate around $400,000, and the legislature specifically earmarked those funds to be split 50-50 between our predator control programs and our wildlife damage programs. And one of the stipulations that came along with that was that they asked us to pull together a work group of landowners and sportsmen. Commissioner Phillips was on that group. We met last July, and we had legislators on there, and came up with a plan on how to use some of those funds. And one of the recommendations that came out of that group, which falls underneath your authority, was a modification to the dates in regards to when depredation hunts can be utilized. So currently in rule, elk depredation hunts could be authorized by the secretary any time throughout the year. However, for other species like deer, antelope, and turkey, currently in rule, they can only be authorized from December 1 to March 31st. So if you look there for recommend changes for this from last year, number one there, we would like to modify the dates that those other big game species, so deer, antelope, and turkey, could be authorized from December 1 to March 31, to bump that up to August 15th to March 31. And the justification there is that we dealt with a lot of growing season damage this past year, specifically in western South Dakota with the drought. We had a lot of landowners that have irrigated cropland, and of course last year that was about the only green plants left on the countryside, which really congregated a lot of deer into those areas, caused some real significant damage. And we actually used the secretary authorized a kill permit where we try to utilize people that already had licenses as kind of a quick fix before we could get this implemented. But moving forward, if you folks approve of this, this would give us a little more flexibility to target specific properties with depredation hunts, again, that are authorized by the secretary during that critical time before traditional hunting seasons start. The youth seasons typically start in early September. This would give us a few weeks there where we could go ahead and initiate a pool hunt, get some hunters in on those properties, help haze those animals away, and as well as reduce the overall number. So that's the main gist of it. The second recommendation there would be if we move forward with this, we would also need to modify the dates at which the pool expires. Right now, after April 15th, people that registered, it's null and void until next year when they re-register. But obviously, if we were gonna do a pool hunt in or a depredation hunt in late August, we would need to have applicants available. So it's just a minor change to make that pool of hunters available year-long. And then recommended change number three there would be to eliminate the $20 fee for elk depredation permits. That's simply a a consistency change. All other species, and it's been this way for many years, those permits, when we do authorize a pool hunt, they're free of charge. And rather than have a $20 fee for elk, we would just like to keep things consistent across all species and remove that $20 fee. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and would ask for your favorable approval.
When does the prairie elk season start out there?
Yeah, Commissioner Jensen, the prairie elk season in Bennett County opens July 15th.
Yeah, okay. So August 15th is still, you think, okay to have a depredation hunt? There'd be no sense to move it up.
We did talk about potentially having an earlier season. There were some concerns there. Again, we're trying to find that happy medium to try to address some of the damage to those producers' crops while they're still growing. We really don't have a lot of great tools in our toolbox at that time of year, just because with the number of landowners and the number of deer that impact an area, it's not like you can fence those properties out. It's pretty difficult. So we ended up landing on August 15th as a date that we felt that was a middle ground, if you will, that'll still be able to hopefully help some of those landowners out at the tail end of August, just prior to the youth seasons, which again start there in early September.
Okay, yeah, I know there's some issues out there, so all right, yes, Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith, refresh my memory just a little bit. Didn't you have some statistics on these depredation hunts? What percentage of the people, you know, took the deer home and used it for their consumption, and what percentage was contributed to Feeding South Dakota projects such as that? Do you have any information on that?
Yeah, Commissioner Phillips, I assume you're talking about just from this past year when we did it in along the Belfouche River and some of those areas, correct? Yeah, so if my memory serves me correct, we authorized roughly just a little over 100 tags, and every one of those animals went home with the hunter. None of them got donated. Anything else?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Moved by Russ, so we approve the proposal.
Seconded
by Gary. Any other comments? Seeing none, all that would be in favor of the motion would say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, likewise, it is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Olson, thank you for pointing that out. As we have come to find out, the error is on the action sheet. It's not in the administrative rule. The administrative rule does read that a person who has not reached the age of 18 is eligible for this youth pheasant season. So it was an error on our part in getting that adjusted on the action sheet. And again, it's been 3 years since we took this up, so I think we kind of blew the dust off this one and didn't quite have her quite aligned, but a good catch. I mean, because if it wasn't properly worded in administrative rule, we needed to fix that now, but it is properly worded there, so we're good.
Okay, good. All right, that brings us to number 16. Moving on to bison.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, Secretary Hepler. We just got a couple quick proposals here before today on the bison, the non-trophy, and the trophy bison hunt. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Mark Hendricks to explain that.
Afternoon, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Hepler. Mark Hendricks, Resource Program Manager at Custer State Park. So the first one that we have before you is the non-trophy bison harvest. We would like to change the season dates a little bit. It currently starts right now at the end of October, and we're asking to move it to the 1st of October. And currently it's a 47-day season, and we'd like to shorten it down to a 40-day season. Reason for that is so that way we don't have overlap between the trophy and the non-trophy season. And we'd also like to move it up so then that way, once we have finished working the buffalo after the bison roundup, we're able to move into the hunts versus holding them for 30 days like we have to do now before the hunters can come and harvest their animal. Any questions that you guys have about that?
Yes, Commissioner Olson.
Can you remind me, with the trophy bison hunts, we don't just give people carte blanche, free range. I mean, are they accompanied by staff
yes.
at all times during
yeah.
that?
Yeah, so the trophy bison, it's a three-day hunt, and it's a guided hunt. Yes, we have a staff person. It's oh, the non-trophy is guided as well. Yes, so we actually take the hunter out there into the field. They harvest their non-trophy animal. They're sorted off when we work them. They either failed the fertility test to be a breeding bull to go back into the herd, or we only sell so many breeding bulls in the herd, or, you know, in our auction that we have in November, so then the excess are offered up for hunts.
Go ahead.
And then as far as the field dressing and everything like that, is that, do you, like, take a tractor out there and bring them back to a shop and do that, or are they on their own?
We do field. We gut them in the field. We have a bale bed on the truck, so we're able to do that in the field. And then once they're gutted, then we take the animal back to their truck, and it's theirs. A lot of them will take it and process it themselves, or if they want to take it somewhere else, that's their decision. Yep.
It's not near as dangerous as hanging a moose.
Sorry.
Sorry. Okay.
I'm thinking about all this before I apply.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this one? Okay. Is there a motion to approve it?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second? Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve this proposal on non-trophy bison harvest. All in favor would say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed? It's approved. Okay.
All right. On the next one now with the trophy bison season, the changes we're asking to make is to move the season date up so it would start on the third Monday in November instead of the last Monday in November, and then it will also go 1 week later into January. That way we have 61 days to complete those hunts. As I mentioned before, they are a three-day guided hunt. A lot of the hunters usually fill within 2 days, but sometimes because of the shorter season, we've had to schedule two hunters in a week, and if somebody's not done by the second day, we have to have two people out there guiding two different groups, and so it makes it hard then to give the hunter the same guide. Chad Kramer, our bison herd manager, knows how to score them all very well for everybody, so the more that he can spend time with somebody in the field, the better hunt they're going to get. So that extra time would allow us to get those scheduled that time of year easier. Any questions you guys have about that one?
Make a motion to approve.
Okay, thank you. Second, okay, thank you, Doug. Any questions, discussion? Seeing none, all that would be in favor of this motion would say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on Matt Snyder, Custer's Head Park Superintendent. In the proposals, there's a number 18 fees for the trophy and non-trophy. We do not have a proposal for you today because we are not looking to make any changes to that. So just wanted to clear that up on the agenda here that there's no proposal because we're not proposing any changes to the fee structure there.
Okay, so that'll remain the same?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
That's all we have. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, that takes us down to the Division of Parks. Matt, looks like you're still up.
Still here. Once again, Matt Snyder, Custer State Park. Before you today, we basically have a cabin transfer permit for one of the private cabins in the park. Basically, what's going on here is Martha Bennett has joint ownership with several family members, And what she's looking to do here is basically transfer her rights to her brother, Ron Millett. Martha basically doesn't come out to the cabin anymore, spends most of her time down in Arizona. Her brother, Ron, lives in Minneapolis and is basically a frequent user of the cabin in the summer months. So the family just decided that it made more sense to turn her rights over to her brother, Ron. So that's what the resolution's before you today to seeking approval for.
That's actual ownership?
Ownership of the cabin, yep, or the cabin permit. So, I mean, they own the cabin, but it's the actual permit that the park allows them to be there is what's transferring here, is that permit.
Okay, we have a resolution 18-03. Questions about that? Okay. Moved and seconded that we approve the resolution as presented. All in favor would say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. On the agenda, number 22, Helmsley Charitable Trust Grant. Katie?
Good afternoon. Katie Sorol, Director for the Parks Division. Commissioner Secretary Hepler. On the 22nd of March, we had a wonderful opportunity for Custer Park. The Helmsley Charitable Trust made a grant of $1.8 million towards the rehabilitation of the park after the Legion Lake fire. And I'm going to let Matt talk a little bit about what that $1.8 will do, and then just express our sincere gratitude for that, because it allows us to start some of the work Matt's going to explain immediately. And what we do today, we know is going to impact the park for generations.
So once again, Matt Snyder, with that $1.8 million grant we received from the Helmsley Trust, I mean, it was a great day to get that word that we were receiving that money. And basically how it's going to be put to use is some of the things we're starting with right away is some erosion control. We know we have some steep slopes out there where we need to basically do some things, and that's going to be some felling of trees across the way. We're also looking at doing some seeding. Some of that seeding will take place. Aerial seeding is what we're doing there to reestablish that vegetation in areas where the canopy was so tight that we don't have a current seed source in that area. Some other things we're doing is some stream rehabilitation. We lost some of our hardwoods along our streams and some of our riparian areas, so we'll be replanting trees along those areas as well. Trying to think what else I'm missing here. I'm sure there's some big ones out there, but erosion control, probably our seeding's the biggest things, and then of course weed control. We know after a fire that we're going to basically have weeds, and that's going to be a huge deal for us. So we're looking at doing different applications from the ground, as well as some aerial spraying of thistle. That's primarily will be our noxious weed that comes back in that area. So currently working on contracts to get our seed in place, to get aerial seeding contractors in place. We've awarded a silt fence contract for sediment control around all of our culverts, things like that, to stop any erosion in that. We just need the weather to straighten out. I mean, it's been snowing down there since 10 o'clock this morning, and we're just wet. Another issue that's going on, besides this, is a salvage logging operation that we started right after the fire. We started with about 6,200 acres contracted out. To date, we're over 8,000 acres that we've contracted just due to the ability of the cutters to get in and do the cutting. The wet weather has slowed them down over the last couple weeks, more from the standpoint of being able to haul the logs out. They were hauling all day long, then it went to an 8 o'clock at night till 10:30 in the morning type of haul, and then now over the last week or so, they pretty much have shut down on a lot of the hauling with road restrictions and then just the wet conditions we've had due to the snow and rain we've been having. But they're still confident that they're going to get the wood out. They got a lot of wood down. They got a lot of wood cut. So that's all going well. So overall, it's been a good process so far.
So as you can tell, staff have been working, and grateful for the partnerships and the local folks, as well as our partners in the federal level that have stepped forward and helped us in this effort. And just stay tuned. The moisture, even though we have a lot of it right now, we're grateful for that, and we're looking forward to what spring's going to bring for Custer State Park.
So the logging, are they leaving live trees and
yes,
clearing areas?
Yes, basically what they're taking is a tree. I believe it's over 8 inches in diameter is what they're taking, and they're dead trees. So there's a parameter. Anything that's greater than a 30% of live needles in that tree would remain for right now. Primarily everything else that's dead, and it's very obvious what's dead out there and what's not is what's being taken. So it's going to four different mills, three mills, Nyman Lumber Company's mills, one in over in Wyoming, two here in South Dakota, and then Timber West, a company, basically a fence post company out of Rapid City, is also one of the loggers in there that's taking wood. So it's all being put to use, which is a good thing. It's getting off the ground, reducing that future fuel loading that could be a potential hazard.
And they've gone through 8,000 acres.
Yeah, we're a little over 8,000 acres already, and you know, they got probably, I'd say out of that 8,000 acres, probably over 80%'s already been cut. They got a lot of large log decks on the ground right now. The contract goes till June 8th, and working on that, and they're still confident that they're going to be able to get everything done and everything hauled out. They worked into their time frame the wet weather that we're having right now. So right now we're not seeing any user conflicts yet. I mean, we keep watching that, especially with some of that logging around the horse camp, but we're confident that everything's going to come together for us. Any questions?
That's good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Number 23, we're going to hold that, skip over that one there. Brings us to 24, the Mickelson Connector.
Again, this is Katie Searle, Director for the Parks Division. Commissioner Secretary Hepler wanted to spend just a minute or two and give you an update about the Mickelson Connector Trail EIS. We'll be back in May with the Forest Service alongside us, and we'll be giving a more in-depth presentation that will include maps and also really dive into the process. But to bring you up to speed on what's been going on so far, if you remember, the EIS began in early 2016. The U.S. Forest Service is a lead agency. The National Park Service and Federal Highway are cooperating agencies. Just a little bit of background. The public commenting was conducted during the summer of 2016. And then what happened this past fall, late summer, early fall, was that we, Game Fish and Parks, were asked by the U.S. Forest Service to put a working group together that provided some route options specifically for crossing the Norbeck. And that working group contained folks from the Friends of the Norbeck, Norbeck Society, Black Hill Sportsman's Club, and the Wild Society of South Dakota. So fast forward to where we are today, and we've got a schedule for getting the EIS completed. The feasibility of those new alternatives will take place now through early May, weather pending, and then they're going to complete the biological and heritage surveys through the month of June, and then hopefully a draft EIS will be out for a 45-day public comment period in late September through early November. And that brings us right into the new year with a record of decision. That was a quick update. We'll be back in May with an in-depth presentation, but I'm going to see some movement in the process over the next several months.
Bet it don't move as quick as the update does.
I know. Well, you guys have had a long day today, and I want to make sure your time is respected. But
it's been a long process. Gee whiz. It's actually going to see some headway. That'll be great.
It'll be wonderful.
Any questions for Katie? Okay. Very good. Park revenue. Bob?
Good afternoon, Commissioner Secretary Hepler. I'm Bob Schneider, Assistant Director with the Division of Parks and Recreation. If you turn to page 25 in your booklet, there's a revenue report through March, calendar year through March. Two parts to that. Permit revenue, which is park entrance licenses of different kinds, and the other part is camping. On the permit side, not a lot to talk about there. It's early in the year. We're actually showing 7% down, but that's 7% of very, very little. Those are permits, park entrance license that people have actually bought this year. It's been a long winter, and spring's not here yet. As soon as the weather straightens out, we're going to catch up real fast on those permit sales. On the lodging side, what that is, that's the reservations, and those numbers are significant. $3.3 million taken in to date, and that represents the campsite reservations that people are making. You can see that we're actually up 8% from last year. If you recall, the commission approved a camping fee increase late last year, which went into effect January 1. And because of that, we need to see 6.5% in revenue growth to break even. We're happy to see that we're there, and we're a little bit above that. So we're actually seeing some true growth in reservation numbers. So things are looking good. The next, back up to the permit section. The one number that does stand out is Kutcher State Park 7-day pass. The park entrance license for Kutcher State Park down 43%. Again, it's early in the year. Those are small numbers. And I visited with Matt, and two reasons for that. It's weather-related. It's been a tough winter, like Matt talked about, and that's keeping people away. Secondly, with all the logging activity, we have the interior roads in the park pretty well shut down. And so anybody that normally would be coming to the park to do things out in the middle of the park can't do that. So those numbers are down right now, but they're small numbers, and we're confident those will rebound as well. The second page is simply a breakdown of where that revenue is coming in from across the park system. Any questions?
Have you seen much concern about the fire? Has it had much impact on our upcoming summer, do you think? Or
you know, it's early yet, so I can't give a good answer to that, but what I can tell you is if you look at that second page under District 16, which is Custer State Park, our overall revenue is actually up 4% for the year. So that tells you that people are making those reservations and plan on coming to the park this summer.
Good, good. Any questions for Bob? Okay, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
So what do you think here,